Thank you, Dr. Pragman. I'm Ralph Preuss from East Grand Forks, Minnesota. And I'd like to give you a theory and see whether you agree with it. The theory is that as the confessional unity, the doctrinal unanimity in the Missouri Synod has kind of dissipated, that the office of the ministry, and by that I'm referring to the parish pastor primarily, that this office has been diminished along with it. And that I was really intrigued by what you quoted from the Lutheran Witness there about young pastors particularly often being frustrated. Do you think this is because there is almost, well, it's kind of like a renaissance of confessionalism in our church, among our in our seminaries, and yet our congregations have suffered from the lack of confessional unity within our church, and so there's kind of a generation gap between the young pastors coming out and the congregations that they're called to serve, and this is where a lot of the conflict comes in.
I think there probably is some value to those kinds of observations. You're probably in a better position to judge that since I haven't been in the parish for the last 15 years. But I think that you probably can make a case for something like that, that the pastors coming out, and particularly in view of the kinds of doctrinal concerns we've had in the last several years, they have a very specific kind of agenda. And of course, the parish people, perhaps they don't have that kind of agenda. They aren't that familiar with it. And perhaps that explains to a certain extent how you have some sort of division there and a difficulty. Yeah.
Over here, name please.
Yes, Paul Burrow from St. John, Rochester. First of all, to say a big thank you to all those in the call teaching ministry of our church. Personally, I'm blessed having four children attend an excellent Christian day school, and I'm just very thankful by God's grace we have an excellent relationship with the day school staff and our pastoral staff at St. John. The question, though, deals with the CTCR document. Am I not correct in assuming that they viewed one office, which was the pastoral office, and all others coming, under that, to which your book and then Dr. Paul Zimmerman made some comments? Do you believe, or quite obviously you don't believe, but when the comment was made also regarding the IRS, that for really the sake, again, of taking a look at what the United States government is asking us, in the called people of religion to get tax write-offs and everything, that was one of the things I know that many put the CTCR document said, that that's the reason now that there's been credence or ordination or a divine call to the various ministries. Just a brief reaction to that, please.
I guess the first thing I'd want to say is that I think that the tax matter may have, and the selective service matter too, for that, back at the Second World War and so forth, raised a number of questions about the relationship of the teacher over against the government. I think that's one of the factors, but I don't think that's the whole factor. I think that the teaching ministers have found themselves historically as kind of an unding between laity and pastors. And part of the problem perhaps you have is trying to figure out exactly what slot they should be in. And so I wouldn't want to just simply say that the teachers are concerned about their status or their role merely for income tax purposes. This is an issue that's been there for quite a while. Back in the 1950s, the Synod studied this in much detail and published a report, I think it was in the 1953 Synod at Houston. And I would suggest that those of you who want to pursue that a little bit, that's where I'd start. It's in the proceedings for the 1953 Synodical Convention at Houston.
Over here to my right.
Jim Bauer, University Lutheran Chapel in Lincoln. This has to do with what you said and then also with what Dr. Wohlenberg said earlier, and I'd like to talk with him privately about it. You were talking about seminary professors and college professors, and I guess my question is, as a person who is serving a campus ministry with word and sacrament, but not having congregational status as such, and so not called to a regular congregation, the question was asked before if Dr. Bowman was a pastor, and I'm wondering if, in your opinion, and then also in Dr. Wohlenberg's opinion, if, in fact, I am a pastor.
Can I ask Dr. Wohlenberg to answer first?
I guess my question is, what about the authority that I have to do what I'm doing?
Yeah. I think it's a very good question. I think as far as the roster of the Synod is concerned, they list you without equivocation as a pastor. Is there a constitution in your congregation at University Chapel there in Lincoln? Do you have a constitution, and has it been approved by the district and all that sort of thing?
Well, it's a constitution, but it's not one of a congregation. I mean, we operate with something that's an assembly, but it has no official status.
You don't have any official members, in other words?
No.
Yeah. I would feel that my conclusion, I vicared in that kind of a situation, that you are a pastor, and that the parishes of the district, in this case the Nebraska district, have acted together to call you through an agency that they have established, namely the Board of Directors, to serve their members while they are students there at the university. That would be my off-the-top-of-the-head answer, Jim.
I noticed Dr. Wallenberg over at the microphone to my left. Would you like to respond, sir?
I think that Dr. Pragman has answered the question the same way I would. Mm-hmm. He's in the ministry of Word and Sacrament. Mm-hmm. That's the pastoral ministry. Mm-hmm.
Another familiar face, Dr. Corby.
Kenneth Corby, Chatham Fields Evangelical Lutheran Church in Chicago. I'd like to make two or three simple little comments. I hope it's not carrying coals to Newcastle. We will introduce an intellectual collision into our thinking if, on the one hand, we exalt the priesthood of believers, hieratoima, and denigrate hierarchy, hierarchos, or hierarche. The one has to do with the priesthood of believers. The other has to do with ruling as a priest. Walther is peculiarly crippled on his exposition of the priesthood of believers. He repeats the phrase in 1 Peter 2:9 very frequently, perhaps trying to persuade himself. But the priesthood of believers ought to be expounded first. A priest is one who is ordained to care for holy things, and he must rule. He must rule his own sexual being within his skin as a priest, and not take care of his sexuality as a bad priest. He must rule time. He must rule space. And to be in the priesthood is to be bound to other people in order to be a priest for other people. A priest is one who speaks to God about his neighbor. He must pray. And a priest is one who speaks to his neighbor about God. He must teach. A priest is one who must make sacrifices. He bears his suffering with patience and joy. He offers his life to God in the simple things that have no appearance of glory, in the daily business of his life. Now, he is a ruling priest. He must be a hierarchical being. We have adopted the metaphysical tradition of the word, Plotinus, and the mystical tradition, the Areopagite and St. Paul John of the Cross, as if those defined hierarchy. There is another whole theological teaching that ought to alter our thinking. So that when we talk about a pastor, then, the only appropriate way to talk about him is the bishop who is overseeing this company of priests. The problem may be that other people don't think highly enough of us. If any of us are true theologians of the cross, we must be despised and eschewed and finally die like the Lord did. That is to be a theologian of the cross. Our ordination speeds up our baptismal dying. But what is significant in the relationship between the two is that the episcopus, the only God-ordained episcopus, is the parish pastor. And his episcopate is the priesthood of the believers. And it is not merely, as we are being told with utter confusion now, that you do church work of cooking the dinner for the people who are going to make the evangelism calls, and that's a holy thing. Bull! What is the holy thing is how you cook all of your meals and how you work for them. Now, I want to relate. I think that we must be more precise. Dr. Wallenberg, you must be more precise, too, and more restrained in some of the language when we talk about hierarchical. All right. May I go to my... I have 2 points that I'm going to make them rather brief. I would think that one of the solutions that we ought to take, Dr. Pragman, and others who are worried about the IRS, is that we try to get a different model for thinking of the word, the office of the word, as the primary, and all other offices as what were called auxiliary. Ancillary would even be better. Because there we have the notion, I think, of a model like a ship and its barnacles. Everybody is sucking off that one office. So all the teachers can suck on the pastor as long as... Now, that is not the way. It is rather the proper distinction between faith and love, the proper distinction, that is, between the law and the gospel. So what is primary about the ministry of the word is that it is the agency for the Spirit to create faith, which precedes love. All other services are defined in certain areas of helping in the life of love that grows out of faith. So why don't we simply do what was done early? There would be the apostolic office of pastor, and all other offices would be ordained into the diaconate to teach in schools, to do youth ministry, to be in charge of eleemosynary work, etc. I think that that would be a solution. Thank you for your patience.
That's all right. Go to the next one. I agree with what you're saying. I think, for example, the use of the term auxiliary is not all that helpful. Auxiliary says to me that it's dispensable. You really don't need it. And I'm not sure I want to say that about those who participate with me in the public ministry of the church. Okay.
In connection with the statement by Dr. Corby, and you do get the impression he's thought about this before, I would like to be allowed one comment, and that is, from the standpoint of New Testament exegesis, it's interesting that when this discussion of the priesthood of all believers comes up, it's so rarely discussed as to what the priesthood in 1 Peter is actually referring to, and it is often forgotten that the Old Testament people of God were a nation of priests. It is all too quick that I think we make the slide between the priesthood and the pastoral office, when in fact this sort of ambiguity, which is present in the Old Testament between a Levitical priesthood and a nation being called a nation of priests, is surely being reflected in something like this. Mm-hmm. Now, we're a little bit behind on our time. Let's take one more question because we are a few minutes over. Over to this microphone, please.
It's the second time it's happened to him.
Yeah. Gee, that's too bad. No. All of which shows that our baptismal cross is being hastened. Please, Ken Sherb.
Thank you. Ken Sherb from Columbus, Ohio. Dr. Pragman and I go back to the days in which he and I were the ruling Greek scholars at Seward. As Dr. Bowles
may say something for you, but not too much for
me. As
you.
Dr. Bowles can tell you, if I'm one of the ruling Greek scholars, we were in a bad way. My question has to do with this whole business of necessity and absolute necessity of this or that office. You alluded to Pieper's discussion, which indicates that even the office of pastor is not absolutely necessary. As I read it, it seems to me that what he is saying is that one can be converted without the benefit of a pastor,
yeah,
and one could, in fact, live his entire life as a Christian without ever having had contact with a pastor. In that sense, the public ministry, the pastoral office, is not absolutely necessary. Mm-hmm. I think the distinction, though, where certainly Walther and also Pieper would draw the line, say, between the office of pastor and the office of teacher, is that the office of pastor is divinely instituted, the office of teacher is not. Your reaction?
I think that's correct. I think that's the way Walther would handle it. Walther would say that these other offices are alongside of the pastoral office. They share in the pastoral office. But they are not the pastoral office. Yeah. And I think you're right in terms of your comments about necessity.
Well, thank you very much for a very stimulating presentation.